Welcome to Smarten Up, the show where we demystify the complex world of tax and provide practical business insights. I'm your host, Sally Preston. As a business owner, I know how frustrating it can be when it seems hard to access understandable information, particularly when the topic is as complex as the tax law. So in this podcast, we will explore topics to help you make smarter decisions when it comes to your business taxes, which will ultimately benefit your bottom line. Whether you are starting up in business or have been in business for years, this podcast aims to become an essential part of your financial toolkit. Welcome to Smarten Up, the Tax and Business Podcast. My name is Sally Preston, and I will be your host. So in this episode, we're going to discuss capital gains tax. Now, in other episodes, we've talked about topics that involve capital gains tax, but we haven't really covered the basics. So today we're going to be covering what is a capital gains tax asset, what assets are exempt or have special rules, what could trigger a capital gain or loss, how is your tax calculated, how can you reduce your tax, the big question, and my top three tricks and traps to be aware of when dealing with capital gains tax. So let's get stuck into it. So number one, what is a capital gains tax asset? So it includes any kind of property or a legal or equitable right that is not property. So examples include land and buildings, shares in a company or units in a unit trust, options, so this would be options to buy shares, options to acquire an asset of any kind. It includes debts that are owed to you, and that's a CGT asset. It also includes a right to enforce contractual obligations. So where you have a contract that can be enforced, whether this is in writing or not, the right to enforce that contract itself is actually a CGT asset. So it's important to note that the definition of property in the law has been deliberately left very broad, and there are no express exclusions or exemptions in the law. There are other provisions, however, which specifically exempt certain assets from being taxed as CGT assets. So the fact that they're exempted does not stop them being CGT assets in the first place. So if you think about it, everything's a CGT asset. That's the easiest way to look at it. So as a definition of CGT assets is generally all-encompassing, there are not too many examples of assets that are not. So it's important to know that a CGT asset can be either tangible, which is something you can touch and feel, like land, furniture, boats, plant and equipment, or intangible. And this is things like goodwill and the investments you hold in shares, units, including those rights and options. It might even be a trademark, copyright, a whole bunch of things that are intangible. So number two, let's talk about the assets that are exempt or that have special rules. So we'll start with cars and motorcycles. So a capital gain is exempted from CGT, and any capital losses are ignored if it's made in relation to a car, motorcycle, or similar vehicle. So a car is a motor vehicle that is designed to carry a load of less than 1 ton and less than 9 passengers. So that's important to note too. Usually cars such as station wagons, panel vans, stretch limousines, utility trucks are exempt from CGT. An interesting one though is a hearse is not exempt. Another asset class is decorations of valour. So capital gains and losses from decorations or rewards of valour are also ignored unless you've paid for that decoration. Another category are collectibles. Now for this case, it is important to distinguish collectibles and personal use assets from other CGT assets. And these assets have special rules around the use of losses and calculating the cost base and combining them into sets. So capital losses from collectibles can only be used to offset capital gains from other collectibles. So if capital losses from collectibles exceed capital gains in any given year, then that loss from collectibles is carried forward to future years. Important to also know that capital gains or losses from assets purchased for less than $500 are also ignored. Now, what is a collectible then? Well, it's things like artwork, jewellery, an antique, a coin or medallion, rare books and manuscripts, and even stamps. So the main thing is that it's used or kept mainly for your personal use or enjoyment. So that's a collectible. So an antique may only qualify as an antique if it was created over 100 years earlier than when it was sold or otherwise disposed of. So it must be an object of artistic historical significance. Personal use assets. Well, what are they? Well, they are assets used for your personal use or enjoyment. So common examples include things like motor cars, which we've already talked about the car exemption. Well, let's talk about maybe boats, windsurfers, fridges, washing machines. I'm not sure I keep mine for personal enjoyment. Beds, sporting equipment, horses that you race as a hobby, video cameras, all those things are personal use assets, unless you're using it in a business. So it's where you're keeping it for your personal use. So capital gains from assets where the first element is less than $10,000, so where you've bought it for less than $10,000 are also ignored. All right, so all capital losses from personal use assets are generally ignored. Then there's another category of assets that have their own rules. So they're assets used to produce exempt income. So capital gains or losses from assets used solely to produce exempt or non-assessable, non-exempt income are ignored. Now, the one that confuses people is things like depreciating assets and trading stock. So what happens with these assets is there is a specific exclusion in the law that actually says you need to take into account how they're taxed under their own rules. So generally, we don't tax them under the CGT rules. There's some exemptions to that. But generally, if you think depreciating assets have their own rules, and so do trading stock. Now, a big exemption, and we're going to do a separate podcast on this one. This is the main residence exemption. So an individual taxpayer is allowed to ignore any capital gain or loss that you make from triggering a CGT event. So when you sell your dwelling that is your main residence. All right. So, and that's exemption from that is if you acquired it from a deceased estate. So basically, if you sell your family home, if it's always been your family home, then it will be CGT exempt. We will do a separate thing with the ins and outs on main residence exemption. So a separate podcast on that. All right, so they're the rules or the specific exemptions and assets that have their own rules. So it's important to be aware that whilst we're basically steadily every asset is a CGT asset, there are different categories that have their own little section in the law that's important to take into account if you are disposing or triggering a capital gains tax event for one of those. So let's talk about then what could trigger a capital gain or loss. So many things can trigger a capital gains tax event. There are actually 54 different capital gains tax events in the law. Now, I'm not going to go through them all in this episode. A, you'd be bored, and B, you're probably never going to come across a lot of them. So these 54 CGT events relate to things like disposing of assets, hire purchase and other similar agreements, when an asset comes to an end, including when it's lost or destroyed, and then also events around bringing a CGT asset into existence. Now, the other CGT events that can arise surround things and transactions that relate to trusts, leases, shares. There's special capital receipts, including forfeiting a deposit. There's things around tax residency and what happens when you change tax residency, and that can trigger a CGT event. Now, there's events that are triggered due to applying a tax rollover and transactions that have happened in the past. There's also CGT events around the application of the tax consolidation rules. And there's other miscellaneous matters in there. So there's a lot of CGT events. There's a lot of transactions that can trigger it. But for this purpose, we're going to talk about the more commonly known triggers for a capital gain or loss. And that's when you either sell your assets, trade or swap them, or they're lost or destroyed. So the type of event that applies can affect when it's deemed to have happened and how you calculate your profit and loss. And that's also really important. So not all these 54 CGT events have the same way of calculating the capital gain or loss or the same timing or triggering of this CGT event. All right, so let's talk about when an asset is sold or disposed of. So when you sell, get rid of, trash, whatever you do to an asset, it will cause a CGT event. And that could potentially result in either a capital gain or a capital loss to you if you're the owner. If it's a sales contract, the CGT event occurs when you agree to the contract. So for example, if you're selling a property, it triggers the event on the contract date, not on the settlement date. So it's important as this will determine where or which year you include the capital gain or loss on your tax return. So say that you contract to sell a property on one date, but it doesn't actually settle until a date that's in the next financial year. You'd have to actually record the capital gain or loss, if it's not an exempted capital gain or loss, in the year of the contract. So if there is no contract though, the CGT event typically occurs when you cease to be the asset's owner. So for instance, when you're selling shares, it would be on the sale date. So we don't always have a contract and settlement date. Sometimes it's simply when we give up the asset and deem no longer to own it. Okay, and that would be when your CGT event is triggered. So let's talk about loss, theft, or destruction of an asset. So if your CGT asset is lost, stolen, or destroyed, the CGT event occurs when you initially receive compensation for this occurring. So compensation, maybe it's insurance proceeds, something that you get as a result of that loss, theft, or destruction. So your capital gain is determined by subtracting the original cost of the asset from the compensation you received. Now, of course, if you don't receive compensation, the CGT event takes place when the loss is discovered or the destruction occurs. So something was stolen, I'm not sure you're going to get compensation. Maybe if you've got insurance on it, you'll receive an insurance proceeds. That's when you're going to record your capital gain or loss. But if you don't have insurance on it or you don't receive anything and it's been lost or destroyed, it's actually when you discover that it's been lost or destroyed. If you replace the asset with a similar one, you might be able to postpone, and we call this a rollover, any capital gain until another CGT event arises in regard to that asset. So, for example, say you had a car stolen and you got insurance proceeds and you went and bought another car. You might be able to defer a capital gain or loss until that next car is sold. Now, that's not a bad example because a car, we've just said, is exempt from CGT. So another example might be another piece of equipment or something that's not an exempt asset. So bad example, Sally. So how is your tax calculated? So let's go through that. So I know a lot of people think this should be a simple calculation. And I know that a lot of accountants get asked to do a quick calc on the capital gain or loss. Well, it's not always that simple. If we have to say at a high level though, and you could do this yourself, if you subtract the amount you received for the disposal loss from the amount that you paid for the asset originally, that's basically your capital gain. Now, each capital gains tax event has its own version of this though. Plus, there's some cases where the actual amounts transacted are modified for the purposes of reporting it for tax. So there's some modifications, so it does get more complicated. Now, the amount you receive for a CGT event is called the capital proceeds. And this includes the total money received or receivable plus the market value of any property given for the capital gains tax event. So it's important to know that it's not just the cash you receive. So if you receive some of the benefits, such as the forgiveness of a debt, that might be included in the capital proceeds that you receive for this CGT event occurring. So the other element of calculating your capital gain or loss is the cost base of the asset. Now, this often includes more than you think. The cost base of an asset, which is the amount you generally think of that you pay to acquire that asset, well, that includes the acquisition costs, the obvious one, the money you paid to purchase the asset, whether or not the money paid is goes to another third party. This element includes money required to be paid but does not include contingency amounts. So something paid in a future event. So your acquisition cost. Then there's the incidental costs. So this includes paying surveyors, valuations, agents' fees, legal fees, the cost of transfer, stamp duty, advertising to find a buyer, marketing, all those things to do with the asset are the incidental costs, and that will go on the cost base. Then there's certain costs of owning the asset. Now, this can include interest if you had debt against it, maintenance costs, repairing and insuring costs, council rates, land tax if we're talking about property. Then there's the capital enhancement costs. So say you had an asset and you spent money after you acquired it to increase its value. Maybe you installed it into a spot, so there's installation costs, or maybe you relocated it. So all those other costs also form part of the cost base of the asset. Now, also included are non-deductible initial repairs. So there's a rule in the tax law that says if you buy an asset and then you undertake repairs, straight away and they're classified as initial repairs, they're actually not deductible like a normal repair would be. What they do is they get caught up in this cost base and they're included for when you sell it. And it might also include demolition costs, but not capital expenditure around goodwill. So it's capital expenditure surrounding that asset only. Now, another element, another thing to add to your cost base are things like title costs. So if you have costs of establishing, preserving, or defending your title to the CGT asset. So for example, say you had legal costs in defending a challenge to your ownership. That would actually be a cost base of the asset. So of course, if you've already claimed a tax deduction for any of the things that we've mentioned as a cost base element, then it's not included. You don't get a second deduction when you sell it. So everything that goes into the cost base, we put that as the number that we get to subtract off the amount you basically receive your capital proceeds when we calculate what your capital gain or loss is. So there's several rules though that can affect what the cost base and the capital proceeds are when calculating your capital gain or loss. And this gets really complicated. But for the podcast purposes, I just wanted to bring to your attention one of the rules, and this is only one of them, that modifies the amount and deems it to be instead market value. And this is called the market value substitution rule. Now, generally speaking, the market value substitution rule is used to substitute market value for the actual transaction amount. And this is substituted where maybe no capital proceeds were received, maybe some or all of the capital proceeds cannot be valued, and maybe you're conducting transaction at a non-arm's length dealing. So this can apply to both the proceeds of the entity selling the asset and the cost base of the entity buying the asset. So let me give you an example of this. So if a rather generous parent decided to gift a share portfolio to a child, now shares we've talked about, they're actually included as a CGT asset. And most people know that when you sell a share, there's either a capital gain or loss to calculate. So the parent wouldn't be able to avoid paying capital gains tax simply because they gave that asset to a child for no money. What would happen is this rule, the market value substitution rule, would come in and it would substitute the current market value for the shares and deem the parent had disposed of them at that market value. The parent would then have to report in their tax return that they disposed of the share portfolio at that market value and pay capital gains tax on that. Now, the child, thankfully, also will get a cost base that's equal to the market value. So when they eventually go to sell it, they won't have as big a capital gain as if they reported their cost base to be zero because that's what they paid for it. They would get that market value substituted as well. So that's how some of the modifications can work. So what you think your cost base or your capital proceeds are can actually be changed under the law. And this is what makes capital gains tax so tricky. So the next key question I'm sure you're dying to know is how can you reduce your capital gains tax? Well, there's several things that can be applied to reduce a capital gains tax or any capital gain that's made. So for one thing, you can apply current year and then prior year capital gains tax losses or even your normal income losses against your capital gain. You can also apply a 50% general CGT discount. I'll talk about that in a sec. And you may be able to apply the small business CGT concessions. So there's a couple of things, losses, a discount, and there might be a small business CGT concession if you're in business. So let's talk about the CGT discount. So where the capital gain is made by an individual or a trust or even a complying super fund, the general CGT discount may be applied. Now, the requirement is that the asset must have been acquired at least 12 months earlier and it cannot have occurred to the event can't have happened under certain CGT events. Now, they're a bit rare. So if we're talking mainly about that you're disposing of an asset, then that's not excluded. So if you dispose of an asset, which we call CGT event A1, then this CGT discount may apply to your asset if you're an individual, a trust, or a complying super fund. Now, the discount percentage allows a portion of the capital gain to be excluded from your net capital gain in your tax return. So that's a win. Now, for an individual or trust, the discount percentage is 50% and for a super fund, 33 1/3. Now, the discount is only available to any remaining capital gain after applying any capital losses from the current year or prior years. All right, there's special rules that apply to beneficiaries of trust who receive a distribution made by an entity that was wholly or partly discount capital gain. So it's important to remember if you've received the discount capital gain via a trust, there's different rules to be aware of for that. But let's think about this. If you've got a capital gain and say you made a $100,000 capital gain on the sale of that share portfolio, what this CGT discount would do is allow you to discount it down to $50,000 by applying the 50% discount. So that's a win. That's one way to reduce your tax. The other way that I mentioned to reduce your tax is applying the small business CGT concessions. Now, we're not going to cover those today because we do have a separate podcast. So go and find the separate podcast on small business CGT concessions and see how they can apply to reduce your capital gain. All right, to wrap it up, I want to just give you three tricks and traps to be aware of when you apply or you trigger a capital gain. So I'm going to start with the traps because it's always good to start with the cautionary tale. So the most common issues that I see arise are being asset unaware is my number one. You may not have turned your mind to the fact that you own an asset. Now, it's easy if this is a tangible asset, right? But something like a right, if that's an asset, are you aware that you need to consider that if something happens to that right? For example, maybe it's disposed of, or maybe you sell that right to somebody else. My number two is being CGT event unaware. So not only being CGT asset unaware, but being CGT event unaware. So this would happen where there's a transaction that triggers you a capital gain or loss, but it's not always obvious. So if you simply walk away from an asset or gift it to someone, this may still trigger you a capital gain or loss, like the example we gave earlier. My number three is not keeping the documentation you need. So for example, not keeping enough documents regarding all the amounts to include in the cost base. I mean, we went through some of those. There's actually a lot. That can have a big impact on the tax you pay when you dispose of an asset. Because if you don't have the records, you can't include it. So for some events, it might be not getting a market value at the relevant time, because sometimes you do need to know the market value when an event happens, because sometimes it's the market value that you're taxed on and not the actual transaction amount. We talked about the market value substitution rule. It can also happen when you inherit an asset, if it's got a deemed market value at the date of death, if you inherit something. So not keeping the documentation, not getting advice at the time, that's the three things. So being asset unaware, being CGT event unaware, and not keeping all the documentation you might need. So here's my tricks to circumventing or to navigating the CGT rules. All right, number one, structure your asset owning. So when you acquire an asset, think about how you're acquiring it. It's very quick that people jump in and buy a commercial property, maybe in their own name or in a company or in some structure, without really turning their mind to what that means for them. So for example, we said earlier that the 50% general discount is available to individuals, trusts and super funds. So if you acquire an asset in a company and you are hoping to be able to access the 50% discount when you sell it, guess what? You're not going to be able to access it. The only concessions you'll be able to access from a company will be if a small business CGT concessions can apply to that sale of asset. So structuring how you acquire something. Now, I'm not saying don't buy things in companies. I'm just saying be aware and make a conscious decision when you acquire an asset as to where and how that acquisition is structured. My number two, keep good records. It's kind of the opposite of the trap. If you keep really good records, then you're going to get the best result when it comes to recording your capital gains tax. If you don't keep records, then it's going to be really hard to prove that you spent items on an asset. So every time you improve the value of a capital gains tax asset, make sure you keep those records and keep them until you dispose of it. You can forget the 5-year rule for keeping tax records. You keep them for as long as you have that asset. And my number three is get advice before acquiring and again before selling any asset. Because as you've heard, the key traps are not being aware you've even acquired an asset or not being aware that something you've done has triggered an asset. So be aware, and if you're not sure, check in. Talk to your tax advisor, talk to your lawyer, your accountant, and just say, look, I'm doing this. Is there anything I need to know? And hopefully they're going to alert you if there is. Well, that's all we've got time for on our CGT Basics, our 101 of capital gains tax. So thanks so much for tuning into the podcast again. I hope you've got a little more insight into capital gains tax and how it might work for you. My name is Sally Preston. This was an episode of Smarten Up, the Tax and Business Podcast, and I'll talk to you on the next episode. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Smarten Up Tax and Business. I hope you found the information valuable as you navigate your entrepreneurial journey. If you did, please leave us a review and share the podcast with your fellow business owners. Remember, what we've talked about today is not a substitute for getting formal advice from an accountant or lawyer that is more specific to your circumstances. But knowledge is power when it comes to getting your taxes right, and it can also save you a buttload of money too.